As of right now, we are at war.
How desperate. You call on such lost creatures to defend you.
How desperate am I? You threaten my world with war. You steal a force you can't hope to control. You talk about peace and you kill because it's fun. You have made me very desperate. You might not be glad that you did. There was an idea. Bring together a group of remarkable people, see if they can become something more. Like the battles that we never could.
Welcome to Furious Finest, a podcast about Marvel Crisis Protocol and the Marvel Universe. My name is Jesse Aiken, and I'm joined by someone different today. It's not Chris. It's Dr. D. Dylan, an Avenger-level producer of the podcast. How are you doing today, Dylan?
To say I'm doing amazing would be an understatement. I'm a long-time caller. I should say I'm a long-time listener. First-time caller?
There it is.
What can I say? I'm a master with words.
There it is. It's the doctor in your name. So, Dylan, your name... There's a lot of D's going on, you know? Let's just get all that out of the way. You're Dr. D. Your name's Dylan. Your last name also starts with D.
It sure does.
So we're just going to call you, you know, Double D, Dr. D, Dylan. But it also turns out your favorite character in all of Marvel revolve around the words DD.
Absolutely. I mean, anybody in the Discord that's seen me even talk about anything, somehow Daredevil always seems to come up. So I'd imagine most people could just assume that he's my favorite superhero. But I'm here to confirm it. I specifically came on here just to say that. Where's the exit? Where do I leave now?
You could. Yeah, we could end with that. It'd be the shortest episode of the podcast ever. We made 100 episodes in, guys. We had a good run. But that's it.
I'm here to say Daredevil's the best character in Marvel, and I'm just going to drop the mic. All right, I'll see you guys later.
Matt Murdock is an incredible character, and I respect and love him. I mean, truly. I mean, his law-abiding good nature with his lure to the dark side, that conflict, I don't know. It gets me. It gets me in a certain way.
I've also heard he's a really good lawyer.
I've heard that too. Just balancing that out is pretty tough. But Dylan, you're on today for a special reason, and part of it does revolve around Daredevil, but that should come as no surprise to anyone's an Asgardian or Avenger patron of the podcast, because they've heard the After Dark where you came on After Dark and we talked about the Secret Wars 2 League.
I would have to say that if you're going to call it After Dark, we should call it the After Dark, because, man, it was late when we finished that sucker. We had a great game. And then we just had like some amazing conversation and it just had an absolute blast.
We got to talk about that game now, I guess, briefly. So Fury's Finest Secret Wars season 2 is over, and it ended up being Dylan and myself in the finals. We had a criminal versus convocation matchup in the finals, but it was really fun, Dylan. I mean, we, you know, at the end of the day, you and I both played 9 games of MCP over the week. That's price of admission alone. Worth it.
Absolutely. I was starting to get a little worried near the end because I was running out of fingers to keep track. But it ended up nice tight bow at the end.
Yeah. And we've got to give a shout out to Patrick like we always do, because he ran this league. It was a great time. Patrick and I are always trying to tweak the league and make it better over time. So the next league will be even better. But basically, you and I had a showdown in the finals, and it was cool because pre the knockout bracket, you were not actually playing criminals. You were playing Guardians.
I was. Most of my time was spent drooling, thinking about the two new characters that were coming out. Obviously, we're going to talk about one of them today, I imagine. Right. I was more excited about Elektra. You know, obviously, the welcoming of her has been a little lukewarm, but I'm here to say that she can get work done, and me being here proves it, because I got second place in the whole league.
That's right, and you did it with Elektra like, all the way, so that's a very big deal. Now, you played Guardians in the first 5 games of the cut. But, you know, the irony of that is when you switch to criminals with Elektra, you won even more games, clearly, because you worked your way all the way to the top and you and I played in the final game. And we had a knockdown dragout fight on the Gamma Shelters, like you do, with that Skrull agent.
That dirty, dirty Skrull. I can truthfully say, I mean, after thinking about that game, I feel like it was more dragging than it was like knockout, because it was mostly just us rolling bad dice at each other until the game ended.
Yeah, rolling bad dice. And then on top of that, like, it was a lot of us you know, weirdly making decisions sometimes to not do the aggressive plays, you know, be super safe and see where it happens. Cause it is gamma. You got to be safe with your gamma shelters. And yeah, the game ended and I did beat the criminals with convocation, but you gave me a hard running. And also I was watching Electra the whole time because I did not want to give her power and I did not want to enable her to just impale away.
So I felt the same way looking at Hulk standing on my objective. So are you trying to tell me that Electra is a four threat Hulk? Is that what you're saying?
Potentially. Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, she has no displacement. That's her biggest probably difficulty. Let's be honest. But yeah, damage output wise, I think she can be on a level with Hulk, especially when Hulk's not rolling dice.
That's very true. If you play your cards right, you can 100% get 13 dice on that impale. Pretty nasty.
Yeah, I think she's just a super turned up to 11 version of Gamora. You know, I find that very interesting. So I think people need to explore more, and something Dylan and I are going to do on, you know, the After Dark episode where we explore this. So talking about our After Dark episode, Dylan, you and I go into great detail about your entire run through the Furious Finest Secret Wars League. And we also go through all your thoughts on Elektra, how to play her, and why you're probably sleeping on her at home. Because if anything, this is a beautiful sculpt and one of my favorite characters of all time, Raphael, would not be here without Elektra.
That's very true. I would say if you want to sleep on Elektra, I brought her to a local event and her wrist immediately snapped. So I probably would say don't lay on her. Maybe right. Just put her on the bedside, you know, put her on the nightstand. Just let her stay there.
Be super nice to that model. Yeah.
She's a ninja after all. She should be like on a rafter somewhere staring at you.
That's right. But man, speaking of ninjas, we got a lot of talk today about ninjas because the ninjas were a big part of your play to getting through the league as well. And they're going to be a theme of today's conversation. But yeah, if you want to hear more of Dylan and I's thoughts on our league, some of the games we played, and of course our final match, check out that newest episode of After Dark on the Furious Finest Patreon for the Asgardian and Avenger level patrons. But Dylan, we've got a lot to talk about today. And before we get into our episode, we had a couple important things to talk about. And the first thing is, speaking of the Furious Finest patron Discord, the hobby channel in there has blown up a lot. And that makes me very happy. It's one of those things where, you know, more people hobbying begets more hobbying, right? That's the type of way to look at it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's not even so much like aggressive accountability. It's just being in a community like that and seeing it kind of keeps your mind ever present and kind of getting you to finish your projects. And with all that said, like we got a thriving community there with great painters and great creativity. And Dylan is one of these painters we're talking about. Dylan proposed this idea to basically accelerate hobby painting to a different level that's not even that crazy, but it's more just about, we're talking about that accountability and the fun of it. So Dylan came to me with an idea for a contest, and I think, Dylan, we're just got to talk about it right now.
We might as well. So let's set the scene. So obviously painting is very necessary in this hobby for sure.
Yep. There's
some people that like the painting. There's some people that prefer the gaming, but I'm all about rewarding the hobbying aspect of it. Even if it's okay. Not, you know, obviously there's people of all varying levels, right? So my goal is to reward people of all levels because we never want to just focus on the people at the top of the game. We already know they're good painters, right?
Right. Right.
And the people at the lower part of it, they need the opportunity to get to that point. So why not give them, you know, a little kick in the pants? You know, sure, why not?
Sure.
So the painting gallery with no name, that's what it's called.
So the painting gallery with no name, first of all, I love the name. And second of all, you talked about rewarding all levels of painting and just participation. So how do we get into rewarding just participation and, you know, judging?
So obviously, when it comes to hobbying, there's lots of different considerations, right, that can limit people's ability to do it. So obviously, the couple things we always got to think about is time,
right,
which is a big commitment. And then there's the whole like skill level. Obviously, painting in general is always going to be better than no painting at all. So right. My whole goal is to just get people to submit, but they don't even have to necessarily think that they're going to have the best painted thing, even though I bet some people would be really surprised when they actually try.
That's true.
So that's really the whole goal of this is like that alone is a good reward for the people that don't paint that often, that don't think they're good, is that they enter this with the hope of getting something and they already got a prize. They got a painted model out of it. I mean,
true.
That alone is a reward, right? So my big goal here is that the person that paints the best model, they're going to get a reward, right? All the prizes are going to be fairly small. Again, this is just purely to instigate people to actually start painting.
Yeah.
So the winner will get something, They'll probably get the first choice of the awards that I have, I should say the rewards available. And then after that, I'll randomly draw two of the participants that are in the contest, as long as they give me a submission and they follow all the very simple rules, at which point I'll let whoever gets the first draw pick which prize out of the pool I have. And then obviously the same thing for the second one.
Perfect. Yeah. And with the podcast and with the Patreon in particular, I want to help support some of these prizes as well. So as you just said, Dylan, like it's going to vary depending on the season and size of prizes, but like there will be consistent prizes, and I want to, you know, if this really takes off, maybe ramp those up as they go, you know.
Obviously it'd be amazing to see a reward scale based on the amount of people that at least, you know, put in submissions. Obviously very open to doing that in the future. I was actually even amazed at how many people wanted to do it this time. I was expecting like 10.
Right.
We got 14 people, which is awesome, right? And that's even started. We haven't even started yet. And that's not even including the people that are going to jump in late. So that's super easy. I'm not worried about that.
We're about to make the official announcement right now. You know, it's one of those things like the only people that know about it so far are just the Furious Finest patrons on the Patreon Discord. So
this is hopefully going to be a kick in the butt for people to join the Patreon where the real conversations are happening. Let's just say that. It's awesome in there.
Very good. I agree completely. And yeah, this is the type of thing that the Patreon enables, like you're talking about. So talking about this competition, Dylan, so we talked about you're going to choose the best painter of a quarter, and then you're going to pick two random participants, which I think is fantastic. So moving on from that, let's talk about the quarters themselves and the judging and the submissions.
So the judging is going to be up to the people, right? This is democracy. Right. Obviously, yeah. Fury believes in democracy. So
he does.
We got to follow that. We got to follow that example. So what that means is that I'm going to get all of the submissions. So the submissions are going to be, you have to take a picture of your model before it's done. Now, I'm not talking, it has to be, you know, you don't have to pull this sucker right out of the box. I understand that you hear this podcast, you're like, oh, but I was already painting. It's fine. Don't worry. All you got to do is take a picture of the model. As long as it's not completely done, you're fine. You got some primer on it. That's fine. You got a couple base coats. That's fine. But okay. If you know, all you had to do is a couple glazes before it's done. Okay. Take the opportunity to paint another model, right? So all you got to do is take a picture of it before it's done. Then you take four pictures that you're going to send to me. So I'll obviously give my email for this in the Discord. And once you send these, once you send all these to me, once it reaches the end date, I'm going to post them all in the Discord. And in which case everybody's going to vote on whatever their favorite model is. Whoever wins that vote will be the winner. And then after that, I'm going to put all the names that voted other than the winner. Obviously that would be real feel bads right there. And those two, and then two more people from those names are going to be drawn, and then they'll get the prizes, in which case we might announce them on the podcast, which I think would be very fun.
Definitely.
And give those people some, you know, some of the limelight.
Absolutely. So we're going to have three winners every quarter. And I guess now is a good time to talk about what the quarters are going to look like. What are they going to be named and how it's going to work?
May 1st is this quarter is when we're going to start the technical spring quarter. And then it's going to end on July 4th. So the American Day of Independence. Right. I know a lot of listeners aren't American, so that might not make total sense to everybody, but we're all going to celebrate with painting. at which point we're going to pick a new theme. So the new theme will dictate what model you paint for the next one, and then so on and so forth. The winner of the previous painting gallery with no name will be the main contributor to whatever the new theme is. So if there's something you've really been wanting to try, or whatever, cool. I'll work with you and we'll figure out a really good theme that everybody can enjoy.
Okay, very cool. So with that said, we have the May 1st to July 4th quarter starting right now, which you and I have dubbed the spring quarter, even though it's, you know, it's going into summer, but you know, the next one will be summer into fall essentially. So with that said, what is the theme of this first quarter?
So every list needs something. You need a leader. So we're starting with affiliation leaders. Everybody's got affiliation leaders laying around. I mean, heck, you get two of them in the core box. So bam, even new people, you got more of them than you know what to do with. So boom, I know you got one laying around, pull that sucker out, get them painted.
That's it. So all you have to do is paint affiliation leader. So someone with a affiliation leadership on their card, right?
Or if you're real savvy and you know how this game works, you can also pick a convocation member. They're technically all leaders. True. So that's kind of cheating, but I think they're all really amazing sculpts. So I'm going to let it happen.
Yeah. And there's obviously some ones that become leader most of the time that you can kind of lean that way. And it's pretty obvious if we're judging and you're sending us a Supreme Strange that's excellently painted, it's obvious that's going to be your primary leader, right? For your convocation team in a lot of cases, maybe so. And also this also includes Dormammu. So I'm hyped.
Yeah. I imagine anybody that throws in a Dormammu is probably going to get at least a vote for taking the time to paint that guy. He's huge.
He's huge. And it's an impressive model to paint. So yeah, this is our first quarter of this league. I'm really excited about this spring quarter, Dylan, and like people just getting more affiliation leaders painted, because as we know, they're the most important models to have painted in the game, in my opinion, and just have ready to go. And so any final thoughts about just like what people need to do to, you know, complete models fully and then the picture process?
So the best way to do it is take your pre-picture. Obviously, you can do that wherever. That can be even a terrible picture. But when you actually take your four pictures that you want to send, what I'd recommend is you just take lots of pictures. Just take them. You're like, oh, okay, yeah, you know, maybe this isn't the best one. Just keep taking pictures. Because once you throw those guys on your computer, you're going to be like, okay, well, that looks pretty good. A lot better than what you were thinking. So just take as many pictures as you possibly want.
Right.
But only send me the four. And please put your name on them. So rename them your first name, something, last name, 1, 2, 3, and 4, or something like that, so that I know who to give prizes to. Sure. Otherwise, I don't know if JPEG 56663 deserves a prize. I'm not a big fan of his work.
Sure. Well, you never know. I mean, that could be the best paying job, of course, you know, that's the situation we might be in. But yeah, absolutely put your name in all the files and send these four pictures that you deem the best. Dylan and I have talked, you know, off mic and on mic in a lot of ways. And I think just your model being completed and the base being painted and getting a final picture, I mean, that's really all you need to do. That's really it. Now, if you want to take that one step further than having a painted model and a painted base, you know, that final matte seal on it, whatever, like you want to go more steps, like if you want to add different basing, you want to add a different color scheme, you want to do some green stuff work, whatever it is, you know, wow us, you know, send it to us, because I'm really excited about this contest, Dylan, and I'm hoping to help you with a lot of the judging as well. And I'm intending to not submit anything in this contest because I want to be more of a facilitator and a judge, you know, to help this be as fun as possible, I hope.
I have no doubt in my mind it's going to be amazing. I mean, I'm super jazzed. Can't wait to see what people submit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we're going to have some really fun prizes planned in the future. And, you know, this is going to continue. So we're going to put all the info for this in the show notes, but we're also going to put info on this on the Patreon and the social media pages. So what we're saying on this episode is the most important information, but we will have this distilled in a simpler way in text format on the Patreon Discord, on the Fury's Finest social medias, and on the Patreon page, just as a public post you can see as well. So May 1st is the official start day, and I really look forward to just people starting, you know, and kind of seeing initial starts and kind of people keeping each other accountable and excited.
So the one major rule, now the painting gallery with no name, it's really hard to find, right? So the first thing that I want to say is that don't post any of your works in progress for these guys. I want the gallery to be filled with things people don't even expect to be coming. So when you do start taking pictures of these things, do your best not to tell any of the major social media sites like your Facebooks and the hobby progress thing in the Discord. Yes. Do your best to keep it secret. Keep it secret. Keep it safe. Those are really important words. Send them to me. And if it's really good, way more likely to wow the people voting for you. So just do your best. You got to hide it. And then when it's ready to be unleashed, it'll be unleashed.
Probably the toughest rule and the most paramount thing, yeah, is not posting pictures of this at all online until the first quarter is done. Essentially is the way, easiest way to look at it. So you can kind of look at this as a fun project too, because a lot of us post our stuff as we're painting on the Fury's Finest Discord, Instagram, all these places. And this could be your side project that no one knows about, you know, like your character you're painting on the side while you're still posting characters in the group, which I find very exciting. Yeah, it is the hardest rule, Dylan, but it is a rule we're going to try to stick to because we really think it's more rewarding this way, because then when they all get posted and we all vote, no one has any idea what everyone was working on, right? Yep. And then we all vote. And then after everybody votes and that voting phase is over, then you can post it on your respective social medias and stuff. Because we know a lot of you, especially patrons in the Patreon Discord, Dylan, are accomplished painters that even have Instagrams that, you know, post all their minis. So I understand you want to post that. So then at that point, you'll be able to post it.
With my blessing, too.
That's right. The double D signature.
Now, speaking of double D and affiliation leaders, do we have something like that we're going to talk about today?
We have a lot of Daredevil talk we're going to get into today. And I think before we do that, we got a little bit of business to attend to. So let's get to it.
All right.
Fury's Finest is supported by Discount Games, Inc. Go to discountgamesinc.com for all of your Marvel Crisis Protocol needs. Our patrons support Fury's Finest at patreon.com/Fury's Finest. If you enjoyed this show, consider supporting us with a monthly contribution. We take this time to thank all of our patrons for their support. And Dylan, we have a new patron of the week. It's not you. It's someone else. Very good.
Oh, geez.
But we have a huge and exciting shout out to a new patron Aaron W. Thank you, Aaron, for your support.
I can't wait to meet him.
Maybe you already have in the Patreon Discord, you know, that's, all of us with true. our fake names in there. So, you know, most importantly, we have to finish this Patreon discussion and thank our Avenger level producers, Zach Attack, Rusty, Dylan, who's on this very cast.
That's me.
That's you. And Nathan. Thank you, Avenger level producers, for making the show happen and making things like this painting contest and the Furious Finest Secret Wars League happen. You know, without the Furious Finest patron Discord, none of this stuff would happen. So we thank the Avenger producers for this, but we also thank everyone who's a patron making this community thrive.
You guys are facilitators.
Absolutely. And we're looking forward to the community growing over this next year, because a big conversation Chris and I have had, Dylan, a lot about this year is like, this is the year of all the patron stuff, right? Like it's the year of After Dark, the Discord, you know, the leagues, on top of putting out the same level of content or more we do on the standard show. So like, this is the big year for the patron Discord, and all you guys that support us, we're trying to put out as much content as we can. You guys keep us going. It really means a lot.
It's a hobbying network.
There it is. That's exactly it. And this is why the painting competition is going to happen. So I'm really excited about it. But Dylan, we have to move on to our big topic of the day, Shadowland Daredevil. More specifically, Shadowland Daredevil list building.
You know, the first thing you got to ask is the Beast going to be involved in this? Is it going to smell funny?
I guess the Beast is going to be in control this whole time. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. All right. Well, I got to get ready. All right. I'm ready. I'm prepped. Let's go. Let's do it.
Let's do it. That's going to have a lot of our listeners' heads because, you know, we haven't done Shadowland Daredevil episode yet. And, you know, apparently Chris and I are going to have to do that now, which is very exciting. It's going to be an addition to our Daredevil episode, which was some time ago, but a different facet of the character entirely.
Absolutely.
I think we got to get into Shadowland Daredevil right now and the topic of today's discussion, which is Shadowland Daredevil list building and just testing and learning this affiliation. We're going to talk pretty simply. We're going to start with the simplest thing first, which of course is Shadowland Daredevil. He's a four threat leader, and his leadership is Shadow War, Criminal Syndicate. When an allied character attacks an enemy character holding or contesting an objective, that allied character may reroll one of its attack dice. This leadership ability can reroll skull results failures. What are your thoughts about this leadership, Dylan?
I think personally, when you first read it, you don't fully understand how really good it is because of the fact that this is not a limited reroll.
Not Wetworks.
Yeah, it's not a Wetworks. Wetworks, it's a one and done. With this guy, if you can cram as many attacks into a character as humanly possible, you will reroll each and every single time as long as there's an objective involved.
Absolutely. And that's a theme of today, I think.
Yeah, I would say so. The name of the game is violence. Lots and lots of violence.
We chose violence. And, you know, let's talk about the elephant in the room. Kingpin. One of the best leaderships in the game.
So if we really wanted to waste people's time, we could sit here and talk about how amazing Kingpin is. We already know Kingpin's amazing, right?
Exactly.
We're not worried about that. If there's probably hundreds of different places you can go or hundreds of different people you could talk to tell you that Kingpin's good. We're here to explore the other side of Criminal Syndicate, the new side of it. It's fresh and new. And it's exciting, in my opinion. I think it's a lot more interactive than Kingpin's leadership, which makes it a lot more fun to play against.
I also think it's harder to play, but like in a fun way where it's like, if you play it well, it's extremely rewarding. Like you said, imagine Wetworks every attack, right? So yes, Kingpin is amazing, like we both just said, but the point of today's episode is to explore this new leadership because I'm hoping, Dylan, this is the year of new leaderships, like I've been saying for some time, and that with this being the year of new leaderships, we as a community of MCP aggressively explore these new leaderships rather than settle in the comfort of our previous leaderships, you know, where it's like, I think this leadership has some legs and I think this leadership might be one of the best attrition leaderships in the game. It's just very strange when you juxtapose it against Kingpin. And I think the best way to do it is not even look at Kingpin. I think the best way to do it is look at this leadership on its own. And when you look at this leadership on its own, you realize that it's incredibly powerful and fun.
And it also really gives you the opportunity to look at characters that may have been out of or maybe rotation for at least a little while. You can pull characters out that probably haven't seen the light of day for at least a little while. And it gives you the opportunity to look at characters that historically, if you did use them with Kingpin, now you're using them for entirely different reasons, which is obviously one of the best parts about MCP.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we all know the power of the dual affiliated like Steve and Sam list right now, right? And how it's kind of like the facets of both sides of that, of Avengers that can do different things in a Sam team or different things in a Steve team is very cool. But I think this leadership's even more so different. And it's this kind of more akin to possibly the Magneto and Mystique leaderships. And once again, Mystique leadership, not really explored yet, you know, and I think it should be. And I think it's starting to be right now, which is very exciting. But it's like one of those things, like, I think this leadership might be much better than everybody thinks. And I think we're being overshadowed by Kingpin. And today we're not going to be overshadowed by him, because we're not going to think about him because we're going to think about how cool this leadership is and how cool this character of Shadowland Daredevil is. Chris and I are going to cover Shadowland Daredevil on the podcast in the future, but like, this is a sort of episode that's a way of Dylan and I talking about Shadowland Daredevil and this leadership and what we're going to be doing over the coming months, and ways that me and him are going to be trying different things with Shadowland Daredevil to figure it out. Is that fair to say, Dylan?
Yeah, as my absolute favorite character, I'm going to just stick him in weird places. It's just like, he doesn't belong here, but you know what? What happens if you apply ninjas? And then we're going to talk about it.
I think you're right. And I think we got to talk about the ninjas now. So obviously Shadowland Daredevil has ninjas, which is a whole nother thing. And I think we should just talk about them, because we have not talked about them on the podcast thus far. So hand ninjas, they have a stamina of 2, a move of medium. They are a medium sized base, and they have a height of 2. Their defenses are 1 physical, 1 energy, and 2 mystic. And they have a ninja weapon attack, which is a range 2/4 dice physical attack. It costs 0. Has a double wild trigger. So as in, you need to get 2 wilds to trigger a bleed. After the attack is resolved, the target character gains bleed. But more importantly, Dylan, they have a lot of cool innate stuff, right?
Absolutely. The one thing that I found that I giggle about constantly is that they don't have stealth. What kind of ninjas are these guys?
I don't know. They're grunt ninjas is what they are. They're not good enough to have stealth. So I'll talk about their first superpower, and then I'll let you talk about their innate superpowers, because, you know, they're pretty cool characters. So their first superpower is an active superpower called Ninja Vanish. It's cost 0. Action: move 1 asset or civilian token being held by this character to another allied character within range 3. The allied character is now holding that token. A character cannot hold more tokens than the crisis specifies. Yes, we know this. But now the ninja is KO'd.
That's an interesting way to word that. I wonder if there's any characters that are going to play with that sentence.
I think so. And I think I have some ideas going forward.
So the next one is Ninja Ambush. When this character is placed onto the battlefield as a result of coordinated strike or ancient throwing blade special rules, it may immediately make an attack. So it would probably be prudent to bring up the fact that coordinated strike is the way they are brought onto the board through Daredevil. And if you bring Elektra, they're brought on with ancient throwing blades. Which are actually their strikes, which makes these ninjas incredibly difficult to keep off the table.
Yeah, because you're striking a lot is what you're saying, basically.
Yeah, I mean, but again, I mean, especially with Daredevil, because we're talking about violence, and what better way to cause violence than with a basic attack that brings in more violence?
It's so true. And I do love that Daredevil and Elektra's strikes both respectively are just 5 dice strikes. But on top of that, you add a 4 dice strike, essentially a 4 dice attack on top of that. So, I mean, not as good as a 9 dice attack, we know this, but a 5 followed by a 4, pretty cool. You're peppering them real good.
But how many times have you played against somebody who rolls a dynamite defense roll for your basic attack, and then you just get that one opportunity to do that extra attack, and that's the one they flub, and you manage to get a good roll? I've seen ninjas take down characters that they had no right to take down. It's just an amazing little additional attack. Who doesn't love free attacks?
It's thematic for the ninjas too. They're just kind of waiting for an opportunity, basically.
Absolutely. The next power is the hand. This character cannot contest secure objective tokens. This character does not have to pay power when interacting with civilian or asset tokens. So this seems to be a pretty consistent thing between grunts, is that they're not allowed to mess with things that are just stuck on the board, but they do interact with stuff that they can pick up.
So Dylan, you being the person who just played through the Furious Finest Secret Wars League with Shadowland, Daredevil, and Elektra being part of your team, give us an example of how you use the ninjas to, like, you know, pick up an early extract.
Well, then how am I going to keep my advantage? All right, fine. So the good thing about this is that, due to the fact that, and not everybody knows this, is that when you have grunts in your list, they actually start deployed, which a lot of people don't actually know that. So when they get deployed, what you want to do is you want to keep them close to another character. It doesn't necessarily have to be the parent, but it's always a good idea for this combo to work that there's another character nearby. So any crisis that has an objective token that's not on the midline, but is close to you, so you would think like your D's, E's, stuff like that, you can move up, pick it up for free, because they don't have to pay power for these things. And then they can immediately do a ninja vanish. And as long as that other character is within 3, they can throw them the token before they leave the board. So not only does this net you a very safe method of going up and grabbing tokens and throwing them back, but it's also going to save you a power. So it's kind of like a weird free first class in a weird way.
Yeah, which is great, right? I mean, yeah, your ninja's gone, which is a bummer, but I mean, you got a extract safe.
But it's not even a bummer, because when you think about the fact with the combo, with the ninja attack, yep, when they ambush, you want to bring them out again, because that's when you get your free attack.
Also, I've come to find, and I'm sure you have too, Dylan, where it's like, sometimes the ninjas not being on the board is actually a lot better than them being on the board, because, you know, this is a different conversation from the shield agents, which are more about mobility, and they don't have a way to vanish, right? So the ninjas are like, it might be better to make them ninja vanish a lot when they give the token to someone else, and then actually pull them out on Daredevil or Elektra's activation, because in essence, you couldn't have even touched the ninjas or use them as a power battery before that moment, right? So it's kind of this weird way of like, you're using the best part of them in some ways, which is the extract play, without giving your opponent power, because we know now in the game that grunts, a big drawback of them is
their batteries.
Free power, yeah, for your opponent, yeah.
And obviously, there are certain affiliations, Black Order, and specifically, ooh, they love seeing grunts across the table.
It's scary.
Whenever Thanos is on his happy side, whenever these guys die, Black Order will get the point.
It's not good. It's very scary.
It's very, very scary. So it might actually want to be ninjas and hide in the corner when you see Thanos across the table.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all. They're just doing ninja stuff. They're doing, you know, they're just doing what they're supposed to do.
It's true. So I guess we need to talk about Daredevil a little bit, because we haven't done it on the podcast yet, but essentially Daredevil is a four-threat leader that, you know, has a decent amount of health, Dylan. This is kind of my favorite part of him. He's 6 health in the front, 7 on the back. He's a medium move, standard small base. His defenses are 4 physical, 3 energy, and 3 mystic. And then on the back, they flip 3 physical, 3 energy, 4 mystic. But on top of that, like, he doesn't really do a ton in the way of superpowers. He just does a couple attacks. But his superpowers are innate.
Which makes it useful, right? Because it gives you maybe a bit of a battery ability for some of the cards that are going to be coming up here soon.
Yeah.
Especially in Criminal Flush. Syndicate, because they have amazing tactics cards.
Let's just get the obvious out of the way. He can only spend power on his healthy side on Demon's Devastation, which is just a 3-cost spender. So even if you did it twice, per se, that's 6. So, I mean, yeah, he's going to have some cards he can spend his excess power on.
And the other noticeable thing, other than having a very high amount of dice, obviously we'll get to it, but Radar Sense gives you just the ability to spike dice like crazy when it comes to people trying to take him down.
Yeah, we know how good Master Martial Artist is on Danny, the range 3. So just imagine Master Martial Artist at any range.
I mean, it's absolutely insane when you think about it. So, you know, so many strategies rely on taking out those key characters whenever they need to, especially with like a first activation with attrition-based list. But if you have this guy standing there, maybe the ninjas aren't out yet and you know the combo's coming and you just cannot get rid of them, you want to talk about curling some toes. It's amazing. I've done it so many times. It's always worth it.
Okay. You're just saying the fact that him being out, which part of that?
So if he's in a position, so obviously with Demon's Devastation, it's a 9 dice builder if you have your ninjas in the right place. So the great thing about his attacks is that if he does his strike, the ninjas are going to pop out. So obviously, if they know how this combo works, Daredevil, they're going to try and stop him, right? But this is the kind of tech on a model that's going to stop the opponent from being able to stop. How many times, you know, if they do a double attack and they manage to still not take him down between getting blanks on defense and having 6 health just on the healthy side, you being able to pull off that 9 dice attack could really save a game or two. And it comes with a possible vanish.
The vanish on Daredevil, which is super cool, which is like a little mini gamma leap sort of thing for him. So yeah, very cool. And, you know, we'd be remiss to not talk about on his backside, he gains a new superpower. There's only the Beast. It costs 3 power. So he definitely has more ways to spend power in the back. Next time you use the Demon's Devastation attack, its range now becomes A2. This is not an action. So it's just like, essentially on his backside, you could pay 6 for Demon's Devastation to make an A2. 7 dice attack or 9 dice attack, like you said, if the ninjas are present.
The one thing that is important to note, that is, he does lose the vanish when he flips.
It is a bummer.
He starts losing his mind. Demon's taking over.
Yeah, that all makes sense. But now we've talked about Daredevil because, you know, he's a cool character with stealth, with radar sense, with wall crawler. But most importantly, Dylan, he has this incredible leadership. And I think Daredevil, if you look at him kind of on paper without this leadership, he's probably one of the lower tier 4s in some ways, because he does have some issues, which we'll get to in a bit. But you had this leadership. Well, now we're talking totally worth it.
Absolutely.
You know, it's the Steve thing all over again, right? Like, I mean, it's not that Steve is bad in other teams. It's just that Steve is incredible with his leadership, right? And that's kind of what we're looking at with this Daredevil. I think this Daredevil will be fine in other teams. In fact, you know, fine in maybe a Kingpin leadership like you and I discuss in our After Dark episode on the Patreon. But that's not really what he's about. He's about this leadership. And that's what I've come to find. And I think it's something that's come up with you too, because the value here is very high, and we're going to talk about why it's high. And I think the first thing we got to cover here is this being a unique leadership that is based around enemy characters holding or contesting objectives. We have to look at our crisis cards and build from there. So we're going to build our secures and extracts right now. And I've got some stuff built, and I'm going to run it by Dylan and see what he thinks. I'm going to let Dylan ask me questions along the way. You know, think about this with us listener, where it's like, this is purely an exercise to test and learn Shadowland criminals. I think I have a lot of fun ideas here and possibly potent ideas, but more importantly, this is going to be a blueprint going forward, and we make tweaks as we go along, just like Omnis and I did in our X-Men and Guardians episodes. So Dylan, we have to talk about secures first, I think. It's pretty simple, but turns out Shadowland Daredevil likes spread secures, I think.
I have to tend to agree with you. He's going to help your models in their one-on-one model exchanges. It's going to give them just that little bit of edge to either take down threats lower than them much quicker, or even help them win equal threat fights.
Perfectly said. And I think it's kind of like, you know, many years of spider foes at this point, but a different light, you know? It's like we're losing some of the tankiness the spider foes have. We're losing some of the movement the spider foes have, but we're still doing those 1v1s, you know? We're still doing those kind of spread maps that focus on little skirmishes spread out from each other. So my mind immediately goes to that sort of spider foes mentality, and I immediately want to play Mutant Madmen and Infinity Formula, both B maps. What are your thoughts on these B maps?
Obviously, the biggest advantage of B maps is that they totally promote one-on-one exchanges. Anything that goes wide might give you a little bit more trouble, but especially with against rosters that go a lot wider, the models don't tend to be as strong.
Sure.
So obviously, when you go up against rosters that have wider list building, you're always going to have that priority advantage. So even if they happen to be able to spread out so much, you're going to be able to always pick the encounter that you want to do first, which is going to help, obviously, keep the points flowing.
Yeah, and delete something on top of your turn, hopefully, and kind of even out the activation count and all that, which seems really good. You know, and I think this is a good point to bring up the fact that with our list building today, my thoughts going forward with this, Dylan, are that I think Shadowland Daredevil is potentially a medium-sized team to potentially wide, depending on the objectives. I think the primary basis of our teams and the build of our teams is going to be three threats.
I think so, with the opportunistic four, but we're going to get into that, obviously.
Yeah, I just don't think we're definitely not going tall, narrow, and we're definitely not going super wide, but I do think we're going to lean on the wider side of the middle, you know? And I think that's a pretty cool place for this list to be. So the first secures I grabbed are Mutant Madmen and Infinity Formula. And my thoughts with Mutant Madmen are similar to Spider Foes. We have less movement than them, but we're going to have characters with four physical defense, ideally. And it's that B map, like we just talked about, the strength of that. Same with Infinity Formula, but there's no flipping. There's no pay to flip. Everyone's just getting more power. Turns on our team, turns on potentially our superpowers. And I think it's going to turn on my theory for this team, which is enabling even more rerolls and enabling even more charges to kind of get around action economy. So Infinity Formula is going to help us out with that. Now, closing out our secures, I have two ideas that I want to run by you, Dylan, and let's talk about the two ideas, because, you know, I'm kind of up in the air and this is going to come up to testing, and I'm going to have a lot of testing planned out with this. But the first idea is a very common modern criminal staple: superpowered scoundrels form sinister syndicate. That's the F map secure. It's now the widest secure in the game. It's 5 points on the map, which is crazy. When you're range one of an ambush token, which is one of these five secures on the map, so if a character's contesting an ambush token, have cover from attacks made by characters not contesting the same ambush token. The easiest way to remember this, at least how I've been remembering in my own mind, which maybe it might help you at home, might not at all, but essentially, as long as the enemy is not within range one of the objective, which is essentially like range 1.5, because it's like under two, but it's not wider than two. Like, we're in this weird cover state situation. As long as they're not range one of the objective that you're on, you have cover. That's pretty good.
It obviously promotes close combat fighting, so it should help kind of mitigate the issue of having to go up against characters that have longer ranges. Right. Obviously, with Criminal Syndicate, they're not known for their speed, so it should help out in that regard for sure.
Right. Now, the most obvious elephant in the room to talk about here, Dylan, is if we pull this against a Wilson Fisk Criminal Syndicate Kingpin player, or even a web warrior, a wide web warrior player, we might be in trouble.
Absolutely.
But we can get ourselves out of a hole with calculated attacks, potentially.
Absolutely. So what you're going to want to do is make sure you group up on objectives that you know you're going to be able to secure and not take risks of having models roaming around on their own, getting pushed around by lines of web.
Lines of web. That's exactly it. So my other thought here, I'm going to run by you. If we don't go the Scoundrels route, I'm feeling pretty confident about the me and Madman and the Infinity formula, but we're going Corset again. Corset, another 17 threat. Extremist consoles. My thinking here is, yeah, it's a D shape, which we don't love as much as the B shapes, but we do like it. And more importantly, we really do love the spend a power to heal one, because essentially with our reroll, if we're doing a lot of strikes and we're adding rerolls into our strikes, we're just netting more economy than anybody else. And we're hanging out by these points and we're just going to immediately spend that power we just gained to heal up and just kind of just, like you said, win these 1v1s even more.
And even if you get into a scrap with a character who is also more tanky or equally as tanky, or you just happen to have a bad role or multiple roles in the case that we're about to get into, you're going to always have the advantage of having more dice so that eventually the attrition game should go in your way, bar some very unusual dice rolls.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to net us more turns, right? And the more turns we have, like you just said, the more dice rolls we're going to have, the more rerolls we're going to have. We're going to do more attrition. You know, it's the Green Goblin thing all over again. Like if you let Green Goblin get all six rounds, it's a different game, you know, like than if you got less rounds before you scored out or something. So I find this objective very intriguing as well. And honestly, it's like my gut feeling is this one, but I want to try Scoundrels first, testing wise.
And plus it's new, right? It just came out with one of the new boxes, so you might as well try it. It's part of the testing process, obviously.
Yeah, it's just, it's one of those ones, like if we encounter wide web warriors or criminals under Kingpin, we just truly struggle. But I think outside of that, like you said, we have a fun time because people have to come to us and our characters are sitting cover, you know. And on top of that, we have some stealth. So we've got stealth until the point where they can see them. And then when they can see them, now they have cover. You know, it's very cool. It's very cool. So I like where this is going. And I think my initial build with this is going to be Mutant Madmen, Infinity Formula, and Superpowered Scoundrels. But I'm going to have Extremists in the back pocket to test. But, you know, that those are cool threats too. 18, 17, 20. Not bad.
Those are good point totals. Definitely on the funner side of the game, that's for sure.
It's true. And I think 17 is going to be a theme with our list, and that's perfectly fine because I think we can do a lot with our 17 threat. Now, moving on to extracts. These are the extracts I have come up with so far. They could definitely change going forward in the future, but I feel like two of them to me seem pretty obvious once again, like the secures, but we will keep an eye on the third one. So the first two I have, Dylan, are Fear Grips the World is Worthy Terrorized Cities. That's threat 18. Of course, it's a D shape. And then we have Struggle for the Cube Continues. That's threat 17 and another F shape. You're noticing got some F shapes reoccurring. Yes, the Hammers is our first D shape if you don't include the Extremis Flex. You know, these are one of those situations like you win or lose. You know, it's like, oh, you have a hammer or a cube and you're scoring points, but also now you're triggering Daredevil's leadership, or you don't have a hammer or a cube and now the enemy has it and they're scoring points and, you know, they're getting the benefits of those, right?
Absolutely. And obviously it plays right into our strategy when it comes to winning the game through attrition. Obviously hammers make it way easier, especially if you go up against a team like Web Warriors. More dice is always going to help get through those rerolls when it comes to defense dice, and that's what you need when you fight up against those silly spiders.
Well, yeah, and absolutely. And we also know too how cool and powerful it is to have rerolls on top of more dice, right? Because more dice is more better in MCP, as simple as it is. The crit mechanic makes the dice in this game very swingy, very unpredictable, and having a lot more dice gives you more crits. Matt's leadership gives you more access to, well, I just rolled this big pool of dice because I had a hammers and now I can ascertain, oh, I've got a skull, I'm going to reroll that, right? So you've got a lot more options with access to that. But on top of that, cubes are very interesting because I think we have fairly tanky characters, and we have characters that can do a lot of things with attacks, and we have characters that can do a lot with a lot of power. So as long as they can spend their power every turn, they're getting off more attacks. They're getting off more spenders potentially, right? With rerolls, and the cubes help facilitate that as well. So I think both these are really fun. And I think the most obvious and simplest answer to this, Dylan, is hammers is 4 on the map. And cubes is 5 on the map. That's a lot. That's a lot of rerolls.
Absolutely. And one other thing that's good to note is that when you are rolling more dice, if you have rerolls that don't interact with skulls, the more dice there are, how many times have you done your rerolls and you have one waiting in the bank and then you reroll into a skull? So even if you use the Daredevil leadership, it's always good to at least have more dice in the pool so that you can reroll those instead of those skulls you're not allowed to touch.
Absolutely. Definitely. So closing out our extracts, I have one here that's kind of, you know, not too crazy of a pick, and I think it's going to make a lot of sense when we talk about it, but I have the Montesi formula found. I never play this objective, hardly ever, Dylan, but it is E-shape, which is a bit stranger for our list, but not too bad, and it's threat 17. But most importantly, this is the spellbooks. When you pick up a spellbook, you gain this beam attack, and you know what really comes online with rerolls is beams, because you get a reroll per every attack in the beam. So it's one of those things, like, this is more here as a testing thing to try more rerolls, but it's also just, it's a slow to moderate scoring objective, you know? And it's just like, it's going to give us, like we talked about, that guaranteed at least getting to round 4 or 5, which we want to get more rerolls, more attacks, delete models, and win the objective.
Because turn 4, and you could hypothetically say 3, especially if your list is really going on, that's when the characters are going to start dropping. And that's when the advantages are really going to start coming through whenever you have heavy attrition teams.
Yeah, and that's when activation count really kicks in too, right? Because like you said earlier, if we encounter a wide team, I think that's when we really start winning against the wide team, right? It's just, they're not wide anymore. In fact, they're probably less activations than us, potentially, if we've done things right. So that puts them in this tough space, you know, where they only have so many activations and things they can do. So I find this a very cool objective. So let's just talk about a couple of the other extracts real quick, Dylan. And of course, we got to talk about the thing that has been coming up in the leagues everywhere, single extracts. I don't think Daredevil's team loves them. So I don't think they ever take them out of by choice, but I think they can handle them. That makes sense. So you and I talked off mic about some of these. Some of these are just not good for the team in particular. Like, I don't know, like the scroll, it's just probably not good, right?
Absolutely not. One, it's the C deployment, because that's going to promote ganging up on each other. We start to lose some of the edge that this roster is going to bring.
Yeah.
So obviously we want to avoid fighting in the middle.
Yeah, it slows the game down, which is not bad for us. But outside of that, everything else is bad on it, I think.
Absolutely. And you figure something like a Wakandan Herbs type thing, the list is going to be way too slow to be able to pull things like that off. So it's not even worth thinking about that.
Yeah. And I don't think you can catch the herb runner, right? Because if they have an herb plan, you're just in trouble and not good. Now we could talk about the Senator potentially.
So the Senator has the obvious advantage of having the defense debuff, but obviously that's a road that goes both ways.
It is, but I think we're fine with it because we just let him get it early. We just let it happen, right? And then we double down on that character, right? And we get him quicker because we have rerolls. But once again, I don't think we bring it. If it's forced on us, it's different.
Obviously, when we start going over the characters, when we were talking off mic, the first thing that comes up is that there's a lack of one out of activation movements or intrinsic superpowers that help get movements that don't take actions, which is
correct.
Obviously, some of the biggest advantages you can get when you have something like a Senator or a Skrull.
Or a herb. Yeah.
Or an herb.
Right? Yeah. So, no, you're absolutely right. I think it's worth talking about the researcher while we're here, because though a staple of the Kingpin list might not be as good on the Matt Murdock list, but I don't think it's bad. And it's something I'm thinking about trying going forward as a testing thing. But I think Montesi's the choice for now, but researcher is a good fallback to test. I say this, Dylan, because the ninjas do count towards the researcher, which is super cool.
That's very true.
They actually count as double in Kingpin leadership, which is ridiculous because it's the only, you know, we say this all the time at Fury's Finest, the researcher is an extra secure in your deck, but it's not secure. It's an extract, but you play it in the game mechanically like a secure, and it's weird, but the ninjas since it's an extract, the ninjas do count towards it. So Matt Murdock's pretty good here. And on top of that, we know it's a very fighty objective. Now, the downsides, obvious. You lose to a kingpin criminal. You probably lose to a heavy attrition team like a Brotherhood or a Cabal or something that just wants you all clumped up. So you do have some strong strengths where you're getting to do a lot of attrition, put out ninjas, get them to count for the research or whatever. But it also could go bad very quickly.
And not to mention, if soon as you see Black Order across the board, you're already starting to get worried about having a big fight in the middle. Obviously, 100%. Black Order are very strong in big fights in the middle.
Yeah, not good. Not good. So it's something I'm looking at. And, you know, there's a couple other ones that come to mind. But like you said, Cs are not great for us. So Legacy Virus, I'm not crazy about it. And, you know, there's only three on the map. It's better than all the other Cs, like the Skrull, like the Kree.
How do you feel about pay to flip objectives in general with this affiliation?
Good question. I actually think we don't mind them, right? Because we're something I've already touched on a couple times. We have better strikes than everybody else, right? Because of the rerolls. Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, we're fine with pay to flips. Hence why I chose Mutant Madmen, I think, initially. Are we going to want to do like Deadly Meteors? Probably not.
Because obviously with the C deployment, you start having problems.
It's C and it's energy, right? And I don't think anyone on this roster really has good energy defense at all outside of a couple splashes. So Mutant Madmen, love it. Maybe some of the other ones that are like kind of just, oh, roll and see if you get a crit. We're still fine with that, but we don't love the objectives because they're single extracts. So it's interesting, but I think we're on the right path with like the B shape. And I think that's the route we're going to go kind of around this.
And obviously, who knows in the future with new boxes coming, because with the extravaganza 100%. Right around the corner, who knows what's about to come out.
Exactly. That's why we're kind of using this as a template to go forward and change and try things. But, you know, this is my next big project. And I think this leads us to Dylan. We have our secure and extracts now. So we have Mutant Madmen. We have Infinity Formula. We have Scoundrels as our secure. And then we have Montesi, Fear Grips the World, and the cube for extract. So now we're going to build a team, and I've got some ideas for a team, and some of them are pretty straightforward and some are kind of off the beaten path. So let's talk about the straightforward ones first. We have to take Shadow and Daredevil. Done.
Done.
We have to take Bullseye as an affiliated two threat, I think. Done. And something that's going to, you're not going to fight me on at all. You know, it's something that you and I are going to probably continue to rant and rave about the rest of the episode. We're taking Hood. That's a three threat. We're taking him. And why are we taking him, Dylan?
There's no stopping us. You can't stop us. The things that he enables us to do in this list, but with the character itself and the tactic card that's attached to him, yeah, it's impossible to say that it's not useful.
Right. I mean, he hits harder than 95% of three threats on his demon form, right? So adding a reroll to that, crazy. On his human form, he has a mystic pistol attack with rapid fire. Add rerolls to that. Okay, very versatile. But on top of that, we've talked about winning these 1v1s. We talked about like these sort of like 1v1 fights that are going to flip objectives, right? He's incredibly good at that. And then you add the versatility of his kit, adding a med pack on his kit for your team. And you add the fact he's affiliated, and we're going to be taking him most games. And this is why I talked about Daredevil, Bullseye, Hood first, because I think they're going to be staples of a lot of lists. And in fact, I think Daredevil and Hood are going to be our basis for a lot of lists going forward. So let's talk about some other affiliated options that I am thinking about strongly, and I have my list, starting with Kraven the Hunter.
So Kraven is, I think, a pretty interesting choice, because right, you obviously get the bonus dice whenever you use his hunting ability.
Yeah.
And you could use to some, especially with your wider objectives that are going to require a lot of movement. You could possibly get a lot of use out of Corner of the Beast too.
That's true. And you and I also know how powerful he is on B maps, right? Because he can kind of do the Gwyn thing, right? Where he nets actions and free movement on top of his attacks. And then he moves across, right? And goes to the other secure.
And even if you don't do the movement, the extra dice, again, plays immediately, yes, into what we're trying to do. So he's an interesting character in that he can kind of play both sides of that field. And I think he definitely should be considered. But and obviously being a criminal makes him a lot more palatable.
Right. And this is why I talked about him first, because I actually have a lot of stand-ins in his slot, but him being a criminal essentially usurps that first, right? And we're going to try him as the initial slot, but we'll talk about some alternatives later. Moving on, the bread and butter And the star of my list in this, Dylan, is my other four threat character, Killmonger. Affiliated, he's going to remove pieces off the board. He's going to win you the game without Usurp the Throne, where he scores two VPs. What else do we have to say?
So it's funny, playing criminals with Daredevil as much as I was, for some reason, he completely escaped like my thinking process, because I haven't really seen him on the board for so long. I feel like it's been so long since Killmonger's been relevant.
That's true. Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, weirdly enough, yes, Killmonger is insane in Wakanda, because Wakanda Forever on a character that can hit as hard as Killmonger is great. But I think Shadowland Daredevil's leadership, this might be Killmonger's primary home now, because essentially he's getting consistency across the whole game on top of the thing he already did before, which is, oh, Killmonger's got a bunch of power. He's going to usurp the throne and do his spender and swing the game, right? So if he's consistent the whole game until the point where he swings normally, I think we're in a different situation with Killmonger now, you know?
Absolutely. There's not a part of his card that doesn't benefit from this new affiliation leadership.
That's right.
There's not a part of it that doesn't benefit from it.
Well, let's talk about potentially the craziest part of this card that, I mean, we talk about usurp the throne. That is crazy with this leadership, but kill count tokens, right? Like, as long as he's getting tokens throughout the game, you are stacking rerolls on top of rerolls on top of rerolls, and you're doing the Shadowland reroll last, right, to potentially reroll any skulls that are issues. And his dice are just so consistent, and that's a crazy thing. And he's always been a really consistent character dealing damage, but I think he has his primary home now, because people have played him, Dylan, in Kingpin leadership and had great success with no rerolls, right? So it's interesting. I think it's worth exploring. And I think let's get the obvious thing out of the way. If you're a huge Carnage fan, which I am, Carnage could also be in the slot, but you're going to have to work a little bit harder. But I think he could be in the slot.
I think he could. You lose access to usurp the throne, which who doesn't love free victory points, right?
Right. But you just switch it with Carnage rules, of course, because was getting more of that Matt Murdock leadership, right? More attacks, more rerolls, more kills, more violence.
But I think that in order for Carnage to fully activate, I think it just doesn't seem as consistent as Killmonger can be with less effort, if that makes sense.
That's true. Yeah. But maybe Carnage has a higher ceiling, because like he has higher spikes because the healing, of course, right? Like he's just not going away. There's legs there. There's something there. It's just, we're always going to go affiliated first in this list to test, you know, and to build around. And I think we're building our list around, honestly, Shadowland Daredevil's leadership, Hood, Killmonger, and probably Bullseye, like having that as a core. And let's talk about that core. That's 13 threat core. That's pretty good.
Absolutely. And it obviously gives you just enough bending on whichever character you want to flex in based on the threat level.
Yeah, and you drop Bullseye, 11 threat, you know, not bad either.
Yep, yep. So the one question that does come up, though, is what happens if we get a 15 threat game? Because with only 1-2 threat, it obviously leaves us vulnerable to an odd point level. What do you think is a good course of action for that?
Okay, so you're saying if that's our intention to have a core basically around Daredevil, Killmonger, Hood, mm-hmm. with that 11, right? And then now we're kind of... So we're going to have to grab another 4, right? Which I do have some 4s in mind. Or, you know, we get lucky and we kind of go up to 16, 17, right? And we kind of flex that way. But let's just talk about our next 4, Dylan, because you set up so well. So this is what's tough. This is who you are as a player. This is who you are as what you want to try. For me right now, Rogue. It's all Rogue all day. But no, seriously, there's a lot of characters in this 4 threat spot, which I think are really good, because you got to think about it. This is our flex spot. This is our spot where we want a character that can do a lot of things to make up for the lack of our rest of our team. So far we have Shadowland Daredevil, Killmonger and Hood and Bullseye, Dylan, which all do one thing. They all do a lot of damage really well. That's about it. That's about it.
Not a lot of movement other than some charge.
Right. We have a little bit of charging on Killmonger and Hood, which is phenomenal, but we need some throws. We need some superpower mitigation, things like that. So Rogue brings different damage types. She brings throws. She brings charge. She brings meat and absorption, which sometimes just wins games. It's weird, but it does. It's just, you know, an incredible booby trap with more dice results, right? And just auto deal damage to characters.
And the best spender in the game, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, Southern Hospitality is, you'd pay that price just for the size 4 throw, right?
Absolutely.
And it just happens to have a 7 dice attack before that.
with re-rolls, might I add.
I know.
Makes it so consistent.
Let's also talk about the power of Rogue's Strike with a re-roll, where you get to choose if it's physical or energy, and then you get a Wild of Sap power with re-rolls, right? So not only are you dealing more damage, but you are actually controlling your opponent because you're taking away their power with sap power from a reroll, potentially getting wild. Rogue is also another character with the lizard reduction, right? So reduce damage by one to a minimum of one. So she has flight, she has mobility, she has all these things. She fits all situations, essentially. So she's our baseline pick, but I have some other forthright picks, which I think are really fun, which we should just talk about, because you might be the player out there that would much rather have these picks. So I think the next picks, Dylan, you and I have talked about off mic a lot. The first pick is Venom.
Absolutely. Venom was we almost said it at the exact same time we were talking about it. It was pretty much a jinx. Mm-hmm. Venom is a super solid four threat, especially with some of the crises that we have. It even helps with that, especially with the cover. It makes him more resilient, which obviously is going to help you get off your counterattacks more and such and such.
Well, and counterattacks with rerolls are pretty insane.
Especially his, since it's so powerful. How many times have you lost an activation on a counterattack from Venom?
Right, and they can't modify dice on defense.
And it's obnoxious how good it gets when you're rerolling one and potentially two dice, which we'll get into a little later.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously a fantastic pick. I think Rogue might edge him out just a little bit because she is more mobile.
Yes.
Especially since our crises are so far apart. That obviously, I think, kind of puts it just in her favor.
And she has a better throw.
And obviously with the throw. Obviously, anybody that loves Venom, I think this would probably be the spot you'd want to throw him in.
I love
and
Venom.
I definitely wouldn't blame you, but I think Rogue is the better choice overall.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, once again, this role where fulfilling, because Killmonger is kind of one note. We're trying to find a character that does a lot of things. So Venom obviously has the web snares. He has the attack not even in his turn, which is great with reroll. And he has some throws as well. But Rogue has a little bit more. But we got to move on to our next fourth threat that could be considered in the spot, which is Medusa. So I'm going to talk about Medusa. She's gone nowhere, Dylan. She's gone nowhere. She's still one of the best fourth threats in the game. And I think in this team, she's extremely powerful because she already has an inhuman reroll, which is one reroll on attack and all defense dice, which is already enough reason to run her. Then you add a Shadowland reroll on top of that, and she's getting flurries. She's getting pushes off just left and right. She has a throw. She has a place. She can move her allies at will. There's a lot here that she's fulfilling that we're lacking as well.
Absolutely. I don't think anybody that knows how to play this game would ever say that she's not good. Obviously, with the nerf that came from her, you definitely see her a lot less, but I think in lists that need the extra pushes and all that, she's a great source of it. The real question is why do you think Rogue edges her out?
Good questions. You know, and I think this is something worth testing. I don't necessarily know if Rogue does edge her out. I think it's the flight, like you said, the mobility. I think the charge is something that we're strongly considering with Rogue. I do like the innate defense with the one reduction in Rogue better than the Medusa's reroll. But I think it's the charge mainly with the powerful throw. And just the fact that Rogue has, essentially, if Rogue has a bunch of power, and Medusa is very similar, this is why they're both good in Matt's team. Because like we talked about, we're going to try to reroll strikes as much as possible, attack dice on strikes and build more power. But if Rogue and Medusa have a bunch of power, they typically can spend all of it.
Absolutely. And I think the one thing that does help Rogue in her case is that with all the absorbing and sapping, she can affect the other person's strategy. While
on top of blowing them up,
while also caving their heads in, Medusa is more of an enabler for your own team. But do you think that we already have enough enabling? Do you think like the interruption of the enemies or the other team's strategy through sapping and all that is what kind of makes it more useful as the fourth threat?
Yeah, probably. It's interesting though, because like the crises we chose, I feel like Medusa is a powerhouse too. You know, like, I mean, like Mutant Madman and like Scoundrels and all this stuff, like you're just not taking her off a point, you know, and you're not getting on her point. So it's one of those things like we're just going to try both. I think Rogue is the safer. I don't even know if safer is the right word. I think Rogue is just like the the innate option initially because the charge and the flight and all these other things you can do.
But you think after a little bit of testing, you think Medusa might be one of the first characters that would jump into the roster?
Yes, because a reroll followed up by another reroll on every attack is out of control, right?
Yeah,
especially crazy. With all these cool triggers with wilds and hits. And, you know, let's also not forget Medusa does have a flurry. So like she does beat out Rogue in a different way where it's like Rogue has more control. Rogue has like more direct damage to one target, but Medusa, if you do encounter that swarm team, right, she's getting multiple attacks off, pushing multiple people, holding her point, right? So it's just different. It's just different. Like, would I rather have Rogue against a Hulk? Yes. Would I rather have Medusa against a Hulk? No. And so it's like we've got different matchup dependent things. And I think Venom's somewhere in the middle, you know, between the two characters. So very cool.
So one other thing to even think about with Medusa is that she has a lot of access to pushes. Don't forget that Matt's leadership requires them to be on the objective.
Ooh, I like this.
So yeah. If you push them off of it, you might accidentally knock yourself out of reroll territory. So that might be another point for Rogue.
But also, you know, they might move back in and waste an action doing that, and then you hit them. You know,
absolutely.
It's a lose-lose for them. Now, the last thing we're going to talk about that's obvious, and we're going to mention it while we're here. If you want to throw Kingpin in the spot, you know, Dylan, you've had success with him in Shadowland leadership sometimes. But on top of that, Kingpin being in your list is just a huge question and deterrent for your opponent. Because let's say your opponent is playing Inhumans and they pull Researcher from their secure. Well, now you could say, you know what? I am going to switch to Kingpin, but I'm still going to bring Shadowland Daredevil because that's our goal here is to play him every game. I'm still going to put those ninjas on the point. They're going to count as two in Kingpin's leadership, which is crazy, but I'm going to use him as a tech piece against certain lists. That's worth doing as well, but I don't think he benefits from the Matt's leadership very much.
The obvious issue with Kingpin is that since he's so slow, the opportunity to get more than one attack with him is pretty rare.
Oh, yeah.
He's purely there to just kind of get into your opponent's head in turn zero.
And Hail of the King's already one of the best spenders in the game. Do you really need a reroll on it?
No, I don't think you do. It's too solid.
Yeah, so he's literally there as a... Your opponent sits across from you and they see you have two leaders on Criminal Syndicate and they don't know what to do, you know, and that's enough reason alone. So we're going to jump into our next picks because I've got some fun picks here, Dylan, that I think are pretty baseline, pretty simple, and we're going to expand on them going forward. The first one is Black Cat. So Black Cat is one of those characters. She's affiliated in Criminals. This could very much well be a Taskmaster, but I'm going to talk about him in a minute. But I think the world we live in right now, Black Cat is just good in any team, but of course she's much better and you feel less bad playing her in her affiliated teams.
Yeah, it seems a little bit less cheesy. I mean, I don't even remember the last time I've seen a roster without her in it.
I've not played Voodoo outside of Convocation yet, right? And like Voodoo to me in Convocation feels completely fair and balanced. It's his team. And honestly, like you're not really doing most of the Voodoo things the same way in Convocation, but Black Hat's very similar. I think we're getting into pieces in our list now that we're not going to play very often, but when we play them, they're going to win us the game. So case in point, we got forced on a single extract. We got forced on Legacy Virus, whatever it is, probably bringing Black Cat, right?
Just in case, because obviously if they manage to roll that crit and they run around and they run away with the core, that's points that you're going to have to catch up on some way. And just having Black Cat in the list to just possibly just take it from them. I mean, it doesn't get much easier than that.
No, it doesn't. And let's also not forget, like, if you're attacking with Black Cat, you are probably doing something wrong. But at the same time, she does have a pierce on her strike. So a reroll into a pierce, you're kind of rerolling into two hits in some ways. Pretty cool. So yeah, maybe you didn't get the damage off on the troublemaker, as in getting the wild to get the elusive, because the stagger's just happening. So you want that reroll for the elusive, right? Because, I mean, that's really nice getting away short. So it's not like she's bad in Matt's leadership.
It's just not particularly what she's after.
No, you're not using her for that purpose. You're using her as a objective runner.
And if you're going to use a not so wonderful for strength attack, I mean, having some rerolls, I mean, it can't make it worse.
Yeah, and like respect to four strength attack with the pierce.
Yeah,
it's a lot scarier.
Absolutely.
It's a lot scarier than a four strength attack without one. But, you know, sometimes Wong goes off. He gets really angry. You know this. Very once in a while. So moving on, we have one of my favorite three threats in the game, if not my favorite three threat in the game. His name is Lizard. His name is Dr. Connors. Okay, so Lizard is already an incredible standard criminal pick. let's talk about why that's obvious. He counts as two. He's got a big health pool. He's got innate reduction of damage. He's got healing factor. It makes perfect sense. But Dylan, we're talking about him and Matt Murdock's leadership with the Shadowland. And I actually think he's just as good in Shadowland because he's a three threat body that's not going anywhere. And we're playing these kind of wide objectives. And he gets a reroll on his tail whip.
Gonna get that push.
We're already just taking Lizard as a body with his movement and with his throw, right? And then if his worst part of his kit, his tail whip, gets better, I'm okay with it.
Now, and even when you think about the wide objectives, if Lizard's only purpose is to make you one or 2 points a turn
and sit still and do nothing,
just stand there, yeah, I mean, that's hard. And especially if you go up against a team where somebody's attempting to take him off of the point, I mean, then you're just making money at that point.
Agreed. Yeah. He's actually part of our core. We haven't talked about him yet because I only want to talk about affiliated core initially, but he is up there with the kind of like Daredevil, Hood, Killmonger, Lizard, Bullseye kind of core we have that kind of flexes around different ways. So he's in that core because he gives us more tankiness, which is something we don't have a great amount of. We have some of, but he kind of builds that up. And as you mentioned, Dylan, we do lack some throws. We do lack some pushes. He gives us that, which is nice.
And especially when you don't have as many twos to stand back on things, I can't think of any other three that is better at it than Lizard.
No argument here. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to talk about our final two picks, which were very fun. And I think kind of my bread and butter of what I want to do creatively in this list. So the first one is Angela, and it's not really that crazy, but Angela is in here because we need a five threat. We need someone who's good at mutant madmen and wide objectives. She's great at that. She has 4 physical defense. She has flight. She's the fastest character in the game next to Peter Parker. And she hits like a truck and has some pretty cool triggers off of her attacks if you get the right dice results, which we got rerolls.
So obviously you're going to get much more consistent triggers, especially with Heaven's Wrath.
Correct.
I would say on average, Heaven's Wrath is going to be getting at least 6 dice, but 2 6 dice attacks all those rerolls is going to be consistent enough to get rid of most characters.
That's true. Yeah.
And then obviously you'll give much higher chance of getting Angelic Assassin off.
Which is your goal, right? And like, she's kind of like our safe Carnage, right? Where it's like, she's much safer because just like we talked about with Lizard, on her worst day, she's getting wherever she wants, flipping an objective, standing by in it, right?
And a great throw.
With a great throw. So she has a good throw. And on top of that, she's Asgardian. We've talked about this on the show a lot, but I mean, it's going to be pretty paramount in our list because we are playing cubes. We are playing hammers. She can pick up 2 cubes or 2 hammers round 1 if you do it correctly. She can pick up a hammer and move to a secure and flip it. Like, there's a lot of cool things going on here. But more importantly, like, we already know she's a great attrition piece, but she gets better with rerolls. But like, the rerolls are just a bonus. Like, we're taking her to fill kind of gaps in our list. And I think the biggest gap in our list is mobility, and she's fulfilling the mobility gap.
And the fun part is that she does it while hitting things. So she's, again, helping us out while also getting a huge benefit from the whole point of the roster.
Absolutely, I agree. I'd be remiss to not talk about my favorite model in the game while we're here that could also fit in this slot. Doctor Strange, Sorcerer Supreme could also fit in the spot, I think, really well, Dylan, where it's like, okay, he's already one of the most consistent attackers in the game. He has a 5 dice, range 3, strike with Pierce, with Orb of Agamotto, if you just have a horrible roll, and then you get a reroll on top of that. Very cool. But he helps with our mobility issues as well, because he has Scalpel of Strange to help our slow models get where they need to be potentially, or, you know, help us counter those high threats we can't deal. Those Thanoses, those Kingpins, those Hulks of the world, he'll just scalpel them away. So he's worth considering as well, even though I think Angela is the obvious choice. But, you know, I've been playing a lot of Supreme Strange for a long time and I'm a huge fan. He's my favorite model currently in the game. So it's worth exploring him in the future too.
Absolutely. I think the biggest issue that you'll bump into with that one is that I think people are still, at least the general people, are still trying to figure out how to work Convocation. Obviously, he's got a crazy kit, but if you don't know how to use it, like, Scalpel is super powerful, but if you don't use it right, it quickly becomes a detriment when you got a 4 cost ability that you're using for no reason.
It's very tough. Yeah. So moving on to our last spot, and we got to talk about it. It's a simple spot. It's another 3 threat. Could be a 2 threat if we want it to be. Also, Black Cat, I mentioned earlier, but Black Cat could be a second 2 threat. It's worth something exploring when you counter more things and kind of see where this list goes. But the last spot, Dylan, is my favorite spot that I've come up with in this list and something I'm really excited to do. It's our rogue agent spot. And that is, in our list, it very well could be Taskmaster. And that's a safe bet. And that's strong because he can help us pay for cards. But the actual slot is Winter Soldier. And we're going to talk about why. Because Winter Soldier, he helps us keep affiliation. So sometimes when we go weird, when we go like, oh, I'm going to go Lizard and Angela, et cetera, et cetera. Winter Soldier helps with that. But that aside, he is a character with rerolls that really starts doing a lot of things quickly because he's the only character in the game with a rapid fire strike. And he has a range 5/4 dice strike with rapid fire. So with a reroll, it's like a 5 dice strike with rapid fire.
And you figure the biggest benefit, like we mentioned before, the biggest benefit of Matt's leadership is that it is not limited to the number of times Correct. You can do it. So if you do 6 assault rifle attacks, you're going to get 12 rerolls because you're going to hit the rapid fire every time. You just got to believe.
You got to believe. And it's going to happen. But what's super cool about it, Dylan, also too, is like the fact that it being range 5, if something does happen with displacement or your opponent maybe just is not playing the objective right and it's weird because they're not giving you leadership, but like Bucky can choose his targets from range 5, right? And kind of like pick the best target with reroll, right? And it makes a lot of sense. But most excitingly, we got to talk about I Got Your Back. It does cost 3 now, which is a lot, but I mean, it's good. If an ally character is dazed or KO'd by an enemy effect, after the effect is resolved, Bucky may use the superpower. Bucky may make an assault rifle attack against the target enemy character that caused the effect. So just like we talked about the power of Venom, getting rerolls outside of reactivation, you're getting rerolls outside of reactivation with a free attack with rapid fire. Once again, we have ninjas in our list, which are going to die a lot.
Potentially even killing themselves.
Correct. I'm so glad you mentioned that. So they kill themselves and you're sitting on 3 power in Bucky and it's super weird, but you could potentially daze a model outside of Bucky's activation, just during Shadowland Daredevil's activation, right? And we're kind of just manipulating his range 5 rifle as much as we can with this. And it's pretty cool. So yeah, I really love him in the slot. I also think Taskmaster is an incredible fit. We have a lot of cool things that like the superpowered scoundrels, which, you know, we got cover. Taskmaster shield gets around that. Taskmaster can help us pay for cards, but I think Bucky is going to stay in the list for a long time, potentially forever, instead of Taskmaster, because if you get good at this cool combo with the assault rifle, rapid fire, got your back stuff, it could be really potent. And let's also not forget, Hydra Tactics is really strong. It costs 2. Choose an ally character within range 2 of Bucky. Place Bucky within range 1 of the chosen characters. So you can actually use ninjas for this as well, Dylan, where you can kind of use ninjas as a storm hop for Bucky.
Absolutely.
And they're medium-sized base, so very powerful. So I think he's one of the coolest pieces in the list, especially because he technically is affiliated during roster creation. But that's the list.
And it's interesting, especially with Winter Soldier, how long has it been since you've heard somebody excited to bring him?
That's so true. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And he obviously got a big bump with the card changes. So I think using him in a team that really makes him shine is super cool. And I think we're in a weird spot where it's like Shield just came out and Shadowland just came out. And I think he shines in both teams really cool. So I think we're going to see a lot of Bucky coming up.
Which is exciting because, yeah. Know, who doesn't love Bucky?
That's true. It's so true. We got to close out with tactics cards real quick, and we're going to spend a little bit less time here because this is going to be an ebb and flow thing. But the 10 I have right now, and I'm going to let you ask me about as after I read these off, are Field Dressing, Med Pack, Blind Obsession, Climbing Gear, Sacrifice, Usurp the Throne, Hood's Gang, Shadow Organization, Cruel Tutelage, and All According to Plan. So I do have 3 criminal cards, 2 named character cards in the form of Usurp the Throne and Hood's Gang, 2 restricted cards, and 3 generic cards.
So the first thing that you see looking at this is that with the med pack and the field dressing. So I've taught me, myself personally, and some of the people I've talked to, what's your goal with field dressing?
It's just to get someone to go that didn't get to go, essentially, because the longer the game goes on, we have so much value with our attacks because of the rerolls and more power for us doing more spenders and more charges and stuff. That say there's a turn where Hood gets dazed early, he rolls bad or something, and he's stacked on a bunch of power. As long as I'm keeping my team together, which I'm going to have my team together because I'm going to have people in pairs the best I can field dress and actually go with Hood and do all the things I want to do still for that turn, you know? So that's the biggest reason. Now, I know obviously there's some validity to Brace That'd be probably the easiest route.
Yep.
Or even Better Rivals, which is a bit more swingy, because I don't necessarily know if we need it, because I think our dice are so good. And also, let's not forget, we're playing Bees, which are pretty spread, so it'd only be Better Rivals on one side of the map. But field dressing, I know some people think of it like, some people sometimes think, look at field dressing and they're like, well, I'm not running a five or six every game, so I'm not playing field dressing. Because honestly, if you're running five or six every game, you probably should be taking field dressing. But it's not so much that. It's, I think we do have a lot of value in our characters and they all have to go. And also, let's not forget, Dylan, a lot of our list is going to be building around getting us usurp the throne off. And essentially, this is a usurp the throne insurance, because if Killmonger does get dazed, we take it off of him, he's flush on power, he pays for usurp, and he just gets it done, hopefully.
Just unleashes.
Yeah, I hope so. So that's the main reasoning there, but good question.
So Blind Obsession, obviously a fantastic card. I absolutely love it. I've talked to some people, they say they're not big fans of it.
Sure.
Do you think they work magnificently well in these crises?
Yes, I think in Mutant Madman and Infinity Foeman in particular, or maybe even Superpowered Scoundrels, yes. Now we play another opponent secure. We're playing C. We're playing E. No, right? Probably not. So it's a basis by basis card. But how cool is it that we have Blind Obsession in a list where we get rerolls on all attacks? Right? You're getting more dice on attack and defense, and then you're getting more rerolls. Also, I've mentioned this on the podcast many times, and I'll continue to mention it. But sometimes Blind Obsession, at worst, is a huge question to your opponent. Because like, say you play Blind Obsession on a flank and they have priority and they say, oh man, if I go with this other flank, they're going to go with the Blind Obsession flank and just blow my character up. So that kind of forces them to make decisions. Or the other option with Blind Obsession is you just play at the top of a turn when you have priority, when you know you're going to KO a model and you play it, you KO the model, it guarantees the KO and the obsession's already gone. And that's the theme you're going to see with some of my cards, Dylan, because I also have Cruel Tutelage in here.
Obviously, Cruel Tutelage, amazing card, but are you not worried about the skull giving you the stagger?
Great question. A little bit worried about it, but not really with Matt's leadership, because in theory, we're using it when we're ready, but also we can reroll skulls on attacks. And another way I view this card is like you're paying one for three more dice, which is pretty crazy. And you don't really mind the stagger at that moment because, let's face it, this could be your second attack, right? And you're not worried about next round because you're potentially going to win this round, right? Let's say you're fighting a Steve Avengers. This is the attack that takes away Steve, right? And their leadership, right? So you're fine with the stagger. But I also think that reroll helps.
It makes obviously the advantage of rolling a skull would definitely take away it would definitely mitigate the risk of the card itself.
For sure.
So obviously Hood's Gang is an amazing card. I love it. I personally probably use it. I don't think I've ever taken Hood without it. Do you think that this might be a card you would change if you decided to start changing up the roster?
Probably so. I mean, it's not so much that I'm not going to play Hood a lot because I am. It's space, right? And I think it's pretty obvious if our goal is to always bring our two restricted cards, usurp the throne most of the time when we have Killmonger, and then all according to plan, right? So that's four cards. So you start getting that situation where it's like, can we afford Hood's Gang as well when we'd rather have like a sacrifice or a climbing gear, right? For sure. Get around some of our issues we talked about. Climbing gear, I think, kind of essential in this list in a lot of ways too. So yeah, Hood's Gang might go. But on top of that, Dylan, you mentioned you like it a lot. I'm sure you like it a lot because it synergizes with the leadership, right? I mean, it's literally meeting the same requirements the leadership does, and you're getting a version of Dark Reign. So I don't know. Very cool.
The only limitation of the card is that you obviously have to do it during Hood's activation.
Yes.
Which could make it a little slow depending on the turn.
Yeah, but if he's in position, you're going to want to go with him a lot early on every time anyways, right? Something we're also talking about in our list, I don't really think you go with Shadowland early ever, right?
I just don't think he offers enough in the way of statuses or pushes or anything that most other characters would offer. Obviously, you know, playing with the strengths of the list, you're going to want to go with your heavy hitters if you're going first, which is obviously the hope.
Yep, that's totally it. So any other questions about attack cards, really? Because I mean, are there any other attack cards we haven't talked about that you think are worth considering?
There's always, you know, anytime you bring up Criminal Syndicate, you can always talk about Cruelty. Have you thought about bringing that?
I have thought about bringing that, and I honestly, it's been in here, it's ebbed and flowed, and I think it will continue to ebb and flow. But I think the issue is this kind of Killmonger strat, or like I said, if you're playing Carnage, right, you're playing Carnage rules, similar thing, where it's like, card space. You know, we have five cards in this game, and cruelties, I'd rather have Shadow Org every time. So then what are we talking about? Are we talking about Shadow Org, Cruelty, Field Dressing, Med Pack? And then I have to decide if I want to Usurp or not, and the Origin Air card. It's tough. It's tough. I think Usurp's just better.
And it obviously plays with the core of the list itself, since we suspect we're always going to be bringing Killmonger.
Most of the time. I don't think we're going to bring Killmonger when we see, like, you know, a 6 or 8 threat across the table, which we still could. I mean, Killmonger is notorious for killing Hulk, like, seriously. But, you know, I think we're going to take it most of the time, so it's going to cause issues. Because, I mean, we've always talked about, too, Dylan, on the podcast, how it's like, just like Deal with the Devil or something. It's like, Usurp the Throne being in your opponent's hand makes you play differently, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You got to be a little wary of the scary guy over there looking at you real sharp.
There's power to it, you know? Like, into Jaka being on the board with that card out, like, I'm saying, like, even if he doesn't get it off, you play a certain way, and it kind of controls you in a lot of ways. So it's very cool. I want to try Cruelty in here, and maybe I'll try it. You know, it's another attack, right? Which is very good, but it's not a great attack. So I think All According to Plan and Shadow Org are too powerful. And I think this is a good time to talk about Shadow Org. So Shadow Org is probably going to take that slot. We talked about this kind of a hard spot we're having with our fifth slot. And I think it's going to be on certain matchups against certain teams, and in particular on Superpowered Scoundrels.
Because obviously, since we're all spread out over the entire board, getting within two definitely plays into our strengths.
Yes, because they have to come to us, like you mentioned, right? And super stealth, you know, for a turn. Very cool. There's versions of this list I've thought of with Gambit in here, and one of these three slot spots we talked about, where they're kind of in flux. And maybe you can go to that Black Hat spot, and you bring Dark Past, right, in here, and you have kind of Shadow Org followed by Dark Past. But more importantly, you give Gambit rerolls, and he has incredible attacks if he gets rerolls. So very cool stuff within this team that needs to be explored, I think.
And obviously with some playtesting, I think that it'll help kind of hash out if the stealth route is more viable or not.
I agree. Yeah, definitely. It's something we just got to try and play and figure out together. So, but I think with our goal being violence, like you said, All According to Plan is essential. I mean, you're going to bring it every game for the most part. So your slots are getting really narrow. You know, you're bringing your two restricteds, All According, probably Usurp. And okay, what's your fifth card, you know? And that's why we have Climbing Gear. That's why we have Sacrifice. That's also why Hood's Gang could be dropped for, you know, something else entirely, like Disarm, you know? Like, you see a giant Hulk or a Corvus, right? You bring Disarm that game, right? So a lot of interesting things to try. But I also think too, Dylan, that like the cool thing about this list is its attrition is so good on top of being really good at these objectives. I think that's what's, it's kind of uniquely postured for that.
Absolutely.
All teams like hammers.
I think we like them a little more.
That was my question. I was like, do you think we like them the most? Maybe in some ways. I mean, I know certain characters like them a lot. But Angela being one of those characters, right?
Absolutely.
It's one of those situations where it's like, I think we're good in both cases, but our main goal is to keep points parity, score the same as our opponent or better, like you play MCP normally, and then do damage and good consistent attacks on top of that with charges, right? So we're never wasting movements except after turn one, essentially.
Absolutely. The plan. And if any movement you are doing, it's hopefully a charge.
Yeah. And speaking of charges, we'll talk about that Kraven spot one more time, because I said I had a couple interesting things in mind, which I want people to try. Kraven is there right now because he is a criminal, and we're going to default to affiliated choices innately. I think a better choice than Kraven is Laura, is X-23. I think she's really cool in this list, and I think you kind of get in this position where if you start playing her a lot on top of Lizard as well, which seems kind of tough in all seriousness with affiliation, but maybe it could happen with Bucky and stuff in there. Well, let's say you do it though. I mean, you could even start bringing exceptional healing if you wanted to, right? So there's cool stuff there, but I mean, I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about my other three threats that could fill this spot. And I'm sure you have some in mind too, Dylan, but I mean, Zemo and Domino could also be in this Kraven spot, right?
I've had some insane luck with Domino. Who doesn't love an auto incinerate, especially in an attrition list?
It's so good. And like her ceiling with this leadership, where it's like her ability to turn on a skull to a crit, and then she can like reroll and get the die she wants while that still kind of is a crit. She could roll another skull into something else, like, and just fix her dice. Very cool. but I think Zemo is pretty obvious. He's a long mover with charge, with an incredible attack innately with his own reroll, then stacks with the Matt reroll, and then he gives his team a reroll, range two of him. Zemo's probably the actual pick over Kraven, like just as a testing purposes, but Domino and X-23 I think are the spicy, interesting picks that probably are better if you know how to use them.
Now, do you think that taking out Kraven really does threaten the affiliation? Because I think we have five characters still in affiliation, even if we take Kraven out.
And is that including Winter Soldier? Or?
Five. It's not. That's not.
So Winter Soldier would be the sixth slot, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think it's so much threatened about the affiliation. I think it's more, you know, access to our cards, which are good. Shadow Org in particular, it gets better with the more criminals you have. All according to plan, much better with more criminals you have, because ideally, Kraven is a great battery for this card in particular. Like you said, like if I could pull three power off Kraven and five off Matt Murdock and, you know, two off some random character, I think that was a good all according to plan, you know? And then I still kept all my power on my Killmonger. Yeah. So, or my Hood, right? Ideally, Hood has his power too, because our goal is to always have power for charges. Our goal is to always have power for our spenders when we're ready. So you gotta balance that out. So I think it's more just the all according to plan and Shadow Org plays, to be honest. So we're going to see how that pans out. This is an excuse to use Kraven. Like you said, it's hunting token, exceptional in this team, right? Like you mark somebody and like everyone's got additional dice and rerolls against them. But we're going to have to, time will tell.
Time will tell.
I don't know. I think Zemo's the safest pick because he's giving you more rerolls for your team and a long move and a charge. Like his spender is incredible as well. And he does it all the time. So I think Zemo's the actual character, but I'm going to play Kraven for a while and see how it feels. And, you know, Dylan, this might be Kraven's team. Honestly, like Kraven's a good spider foe. Like he seriously is a good spider foe. And I've tried him in Kingpin criminals as well. He's a good Kingpin criminal, but I think this is his best team. It might be, you know, it really might be.
I think so. Just because the whole goal of the list kind of plays exactly into what he wants to do with that hunting token.
Yeah. And just his dice get better with rerolls too, right? Cause he actually has really impressive dice if he does his combo, if he's doing his things right. Right. So I don't know. Corner of the Beast too. On top of that, it's really cool. Like giving them the bleed they can't shake, right? Like you can really help delete targets in a list that already wants to delete targets.
And I think with the intrinsic movement with those attacks, maybe it helps with the comparison to Zemo, because the Zemo's reroll is only so big.
Yeah.
And if our things are so spread out, I mean, like you said, you're going to be in pairs. Is it worth bringing Zemo just to have a reroll for the two characters, or would it be worth being able to? Because one of the best parts of the hunting token off of Kraven is you can throw it across the map. He doesn't have to be there.
I know. Yeah, it's really good. Now, it's worth exploring. I mean, obviously, the power of Zemo's is it's all attacks and defense rerolls, so it's dumb. But in 3-3-4 defense is respectable still. But yeah, I think Kraven's more interesting and I think he's worth exploring. And I think the hunting token is super cool. I mean, I did talk about the hunting party on a previous episode of Fury's Finest when we talked about Kraven. So I think this is a list kind of with the hunting party idea for sure. So I think it's worth exploring. But I think this is a good basis for us to start, Dylan, and kind of do some testing. I know you like to play violence with your criminals.
I mean, violence is always the answer, isn't it?
I mean, for criminals, yeah. for demon criminals, I guess, right? I'm just excited, too, because, like, honestly, this list is 10 really neat models that thematically fit, really, on this list. And then on top of that, you've got ninjas. You've actually got 11 models, right?
And you're bringing in two characters that probably people haven't seen lately with Bucky and Killmonger.
Agreed. Yeah, and even Kraven, right? So yeah, that four threat spot we talked about, the flex, is so interesting. Like there can be so much testing if you just played this list and just played two or three matches with Rogue, two or three matches with Venom, two or three matches with Kingpin, two or three matches with Medusa, right? Just like change that spot, just see what it feels like. I don't know. There's a lot of cool things here, and I think it's worth exploring. I think this is shaping up to be one of the factions I'm most excited to play and look at in the game. I'm really into the theme, too, Dylan. Like, the theme of Shadowland Daredevil leading this team of Bullseye, Hood, Killmonger, Winter Soldier, Black Cat, Rogue, Lizard, Angela, and Kraven. I mean, the theme fits, too. I mean, a lot of these characters have worked together in different ways, or have, you know, Angela, she just wants violence in general, even though she's a good character, you know?
Sure.
I mean, they're just paying her for violence, and, you know.
She's a bounty hunter, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They're just paying her.
Yeah.
Just paint her in like in space bucks or whatever it is she wants.
Yeah. She just wants vengeance of some sort. So it all tracks. But I think, you know, a lot of exploration here. I've played very little so far with this, but I've had a great success and more importantly, a ton of fun. And just remembering those rerolls and choosing them at the right times. And like you said, Daredevil's surprisingly tanky, and just his fun is more in the fact that he's just hard to remove. Not so much he does a lot of superpowers and attacks, maybe.
But it is always fun to scream, "This is the Beast," when you do flip him over.
Okay, so that's your advice really from this is the biggest thing.
Yeah, just make sure you yell at the top of your lungs that the Beast is here before you smash everybody around you.
You're getting me excited about the Shadowland Daredevil lore episode coming up. Primary episode of the podcast coming up, because yeah, it's going to be a fun one. It's going to be different.
Yeah, once you start diving into the Beast himself, you start realizing that there's a lot of weird things in Marvel that it's probably best that we have so many heroes around keeping that stuff under control.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and you know, just this whole concept is just a crazy thing, right? We have such a good moral character like Matt Murdock, and this happens to him, you know? Like, what would that look like?
He did it with the best of intentions, too. That's what makes it so sad.
It's what makes it believable, honestly. But yeah, Dylan, it was really fun to have you on and talk about violent criminals. It's something that you have a lot of experience in, a lot more than me. And it's funny because, you know, I'm taking a break from convocation. It's, you know, we're approaching 50 games at this point. It's getting a little out of hand. And, you know, you've started to try some convocation on the side, which is really fun. And I've started to try criminals on the side. So it's kind of like we've had a fun switch.
Absolutely. I'm hoping that eventually I'm going to be able to come up to you and say like, and maybe switch your list around, and hopefully you'll be like, well, that's a really good idea.
I think it'll happen. I think it'll happen for sure. And I think definitely between you and I both testing this Shadowland list, this kind of blueprint, and you know, we've got these flex picks we can kind of switch around too. We can stay in touch and kind of talk about our findings and what this looks like, you know, and I really think this is a team that's underappreciated right now. And it's like so new. So I think we just got to explore it in these early stages and see what happens. And hopefully, listener, you enjoyed this and you explored this leadership with us and kind of figure out along the way, because we're kind of stumbling through this.
Yeah. You know, a good place to discuss this would be the Discord.
That's true. And I'll probably be discussing my findings a lot in this with the Discord, like I did my convocation as I went along. And it's super fun. It's super fun to do. So good point, Dylan.
You got mad good at it, so you can guarantee what you're saying there is probably going to be useful.
I hope so. So my biggest thing about this is I get to bring Bucky out, you know, and I get to make him a threat on the table and fun. I'm just super excited about that. I'm super excited about that. I'm super excited to get that Sebastian Stan sculpt on the table. There's a lot of things. There's a lot of things here.
And obviously, he's a character that probably gets to roll maybe the most dice in the entire game, if you keep getting that ability off, if you keep getting your ninjas killed on accident.
Like if you wrote down every time he got a 4-dice attack with a reroll and just wrote them out on paper, like by the end of the day, it's like how many 4-dice attacks with rapid fire with a reroll did you get off in the course of 6 rounds, you know? Very cool, you know?
You're going to have to buy more dice because you're going to wear them out so much.
Hey, good problems. Fury's Finest is supported by our wonderful patrons. You can become a Fury's Finest patron by going to patreon.com/Fury's Finest. Follow the show on social media. Find us on Twitter at Fury's Finest Cast and Facebook and Instagram and Twitch at Fury's Finest. Email us at furiesfinest@gmail.com with any inquiries or ideas. If you can leave us a review on your podcast platform of choice, it really helps us out. Thanks for approaching Nirvana for our intro and outro music, and help spread the word of our show by subscribing, rating, and reviewing, and sharing this with your friends. So Dylan, where can everyone find you?
People can find me on Discord at DrAngryBloodBoy4340. Haven't anything more formal than that, but hopefully that'll change soon.
Sure. Yeah, and that's also a place people can message you entries for the painting contest. But on top of that, they can email us at furiousfinest@gmail.com. Very simple, furiousfinest@gmail.com, with their entry pictures. And of course, make sure your name's on the email and on the pictures. And I can get those to Dylan as well. Anything else about the painting competition, Dylan, while we're here?
Just make sure you guys have fun. And just to reiterate, make sure 1 picture before, 4 pictures of the completed model. Don't share it on any major social media areas. Nice and simple.
Yeah, nice and simple, clear, concise. And of course, you can always just send them directly to Dylan on Discord, which is very simple and easy to do. And I will put his name in the show notes as well. But closing out, you can find Chris and I on social media. You can find me, Jesse, on all the social media stuff at Jesse Aiken. That's JSSEAKIN. Same with Chris. You can find him on Twitter at Chris Bruffett, ChrisBruffett. That's it for this episode. We hope you guys enjoyed hearing about the Beast, hearing about the Shadowland Daredevil playstyle, leadership, the Shadow War, I guess, Dylan, is the way to call it. The Shadow War, learning about it.
The Shadow War never ends. All flesh must die.
Yeah, the hand is... They're always moving. I don't know. It's been a fun time. I'm really excited about this list. I'm just as excited about this as I was Convocation, if not more, because I think this has got its own unique challenges. Maybe a little bit easier to start than Convocation, but also like it's we just talked about it today. Like the list building possibilities are kind of endless, you know. And I think we're kind of in a unique spot where no one's cracked this. So I'm looking forward to figuring out.
Being at the precipice of greatness can always be scary. I mean, being able to use any character that likes to hit other people, I mean, that's that alone is just exciting.
That's true. Yeah, rolling more dice in MCP and re-rolling them is fun too. Yeah, it's really fun. Like it's unique leadership that's really rewarding if you play it right. And it is a lot of violence, but like we said, Dylan, I think...
The objective game is strong. It's definitely there.
Yeah, you can win without the violence. Totally. And when people take objectives from you... Now they're in trouble, you know?
Yeah, because now there's going to be some retribution.
That's right. So we'll have Dylan back again in the future. But yeah, definitely you guys check out the painting contest. I'll put info below in the show notes. And also, of course, we're going to have our own dedicated channel in the Furious Finest Discord, which will be fun because it can't have any pictures in there because... People will do that, but you know, we're just going to have a channel in there to keep rules and stuff for the painting contest clear in there as well. And we'll let Dylan post some rules and stuff in there. So, but until next time, thanks for listening, true believers.
Keep it popping, guys.
The world has gotten even stranger than you already know.
At this point, I doubt anything would surprise me.
$10 says you're wrong.